Hello again, Gooners! Back at the top of the league, of course. Who would have thought that? Not me. In January, when I last did a podcast, I think I was saying, how's this team going to get there? How's it going to move back to the top? Didn't seem very likely. And obviously, since then, Arsenal have gone on an amazing run, really, winning a lot of games and not losing too many. So it's all looking good. Champions League coming up against Bayern Munich. Lots of people optimistic about that. Can't say I agree with those people, even though Bayern apparently lost at the weekend. So anyway, lots of reasons to be cheerful. In this particular podcast, going to discuss why I think Arsenal probably won't win the league, but it's not definite, of course. Trust me to be optimistic. And then the other thing is, what about the best Arsenal team of all time? I asked AI that question and I've got a response to that. So think about your top 20 players and let's see if they get in AI's team. There is one of the inclusions is quite controversial. Let's say that. Don't blame me. Blame ChatGPT. Anyway, without further ado, let's talk about the most recent game, which was Brighton, of course. 3-0. A 3-0 win at Brighton is always welcome. I had a look at some of the blogs, and in particular, I like Kevin Witch's blog in particular is one that I would recommend. He goes into a lot of detail, always does, always very thorough. And yeah, I think what came out of reading his really was Kai Havertz has been a sensation. That's one of the few things I have got right, is I did say we've got to keep the faith with Kai Havertz, and looks like now he's on a roll. You've only got to look at his fantasy football stats to see that. Jorginho as well is another player that's courted a lot of controversy, and fans are lately saying that Jorginho is a bargain. Not saying everybody agrees with that, because I've also seen a comment, I think it was on LaGrove, somebody said, made out he's like 60 years old. He's 60 years old this year, 61 next year. He's no good. Well, he's as good as he is in his last game for me. So that's how I sort of judge a player, is how well did they play in the last game. Obviously, there were a lot of changes for that match against Brighton, because the game previous to that against Luton, so many injuries. This is the real reason why I think Arsenal may struggle to win the league. There are quite a lot of players that would get in a combined team of City and Arsenal. And let's not forget Liverpool. Okay, they're not top of the league anymore, but they're a slick team. And I'm going to look at their fixtures and let's just see, based on not much at all, but based on my beliefs about what these teams will garner in the next few games, we'll sort of work out who's going to finish top, who's going to get the most points, who's got the easiest run in. And it certainly is an Arsenal, that's for sure. So anyway, from that previous match against Luton, there were lots of changes. The other thing was Bukayo Saka. I didn't think he was going to be fit for the game against Brighton. He was, scored a goal from the penalty spot. Yeah, Trossard did what Trossard does. One-on-one against keeper, doesn't miss. Trossard is an amazing player. So yeah, Zinchenko is again, he's a player that everybody loves for what he does from a forward perspective. But when it comes to defending, he's found wanting quite a lot of the time. So Zinchenko does worry me a lot. And I didn't see a clean sheet at Brighton, to be honest. Even when I was watching the game, I couldn't see it happening. And Raya's been outstanding in goal, I feel. He's a calm head. He's calmer than his predecessor, Ramsdale. As much as we love Ramsdale, I think now we have to admit, I admitted it quite early on, that Raya's slightly better, and maybe that slightly has turned into quite a substantial amount better than Ramsdale, if you can compare, because they are different sort of keepers, but he's like having another outfield player, having Raya, because the guy can pass the ball really well. Ramsdale's not bad, but he's never the same level as Raya at passing. So Raya's here to stay, and I'm really pleased about it. Obviously, the fans didn't take to Raya straight away, but I think they have now, singing his name. And that can only augur well for the future. Anyway, talking of the future, let's look at the running. I had it lined up. So how many points are Arsenal going to get from these games? Villa at home. It's a possible 3 points, but it's going to be a tough game. I suppose you can say all games in the Premier League are tough, but let's give Arsenal 3 points there. But I could see a draw there, because with Emery coming back to his old stomping ground, he's gonna want to put the mockers on Arsenal's title charge. And then you've got Watkins, who always scores against Arsenal, because no way are Arsenal keeping a clean sheet. But I'll say three points there, although I'm not convinced. Wolves away. Well, that's not been the worst place to get points from in the past. So Wolves' form is a bit patchy. So, okay, I'm going to say 3 points there. So I'm being optimistic. Chelsea at home. Let's have 3 points, shall we? That's nine. Chelsea. What a strange team they are. I'm not expecting a clean sheet there, but it is at home. So you'd expect Arsenal to pick up points. Spurs away, you've got to go a draw, really. It's unlikely that Arsenal are going to go there and get three, unfortunately. And then we got Bournemouth at home. You say 3 points, but again, it's going to be hard fought because they've got a decent forward line. Man U away, that's extremely tough. I think 1 point. And finally, Everton at home, you'd have to say 3 points. So that would give, well, that's how many drop points? That's four drop points in the title running. So now let's look at Liverpool. How many points are they going to drop? Well, they've got Palace, so they're not. Then Palace at home. Although Palace have turned them over before at Anfield, I don't see that's going to happen. Fulham away, Everton away, follow. So I think they normally beat Everton. I know it's a local derby, so they're not going to drop points. I really doubt it. Not the way Everton are this season. West Ham away, that could be a tricky fixture. I still think they're going to get three. Then they've got Tottenham at home. That's a very tricky fixture for them. Let's say they drop a point there. Villa away, that's a tough fixture. They could possibly drop points there as it's away. Wolves at home, they'll win. So that means if my predictions are correct, they will also drop 4 points. And if that's the case, then they will finish below Arsenal, it looks like. And then let's look at City's run-in. City, Luton at home, that's a definite three. Brighton away, that's not a definite three, but it's a probable three. Forest away, three. Wolves at home, three. Fulham away, three. West Ham at home, three. So is that it? So I feel like I missed out a team there. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think they're all wins anyway. So 1, 2, 3. Yeah, so basically Arsenal can't afford to drop points is the answer, because it's too tight. City probably going to win every single game. And unfortunately, I can't. I thought Liverpool were the favourites to win, but now I'm starting to think it's City. Because of the run-ins, really, and also what's happened in the past, we know all too well how City can steamroller teams come the end of the season. And De Bruyne is on fire at the moment. And so, unfortunately, it's hard to see past City. Arsenal could... I was thinking before I did that calculation, I thought Arsenal finished third. I know it's going to upset a few people, but that's actually what I think. And now I'm starting to think otherwise. Right, anyway, without further ado, let's do AI's top 20 Arsenal players of all time, and be interesting to get your comments on it. So I'll go in reverse order because it sounds so much more exciting. It sort of links back to my old DJ days. But yeah, so basically, I want to read what AI said at the start because it always amuses me. Because I asked AI to do this. Write down a top 20 list of the best Arsenal FC players of all time. State why you've included them in the chat. ChatGPT replied, creating a definitive list of the best Arsenal FC players of all time is a challenging task due to the club's rich history and the multitude of exceptional players who have graced the team over the years. However, here's a subjective top 20 based on their impact, skill, longevity, and achievements. So let's see what we think of this. Well, I don't agree with number 20, he wouldn't get in, even though, yes, he was a decent player on a good day, very, very good player on a good day. Mesut Ozil gets to number 20. Can you believe it? So we'll look for the players that have been omitted from this list, and let's see what we think. Anyway, Ozil makes it at number 20. And the comment from ChatGPT is, despite a controversial departure, Ozil's vision and playmaking ability made him one of Arsenal's most influential players during his time at the club. Well, he was mostly sick or off work, let's say, I don't know, downing tools, call it what you will. And his attitude was absolutely astoundingly disgusting. I don't think, even at his peak, to me, yes, he was a pretty good player, but was he any better than Odegaard? I'm not sure. I'd certainly put Odegaard in instead of Ozil, and that's without even thinking about it. Okay, coming in at number 19, to me, a less controversial figure in terms of what he did on the pitch, at least, Peter Storey, very famous number 4 for Arsenal, did play for England, really tough. And as ChatGPT says, Peter Storey was known for his versatility and tough tackling. He was a reliable presence in Arsenal's midfield during the late 60s and early 70s. And I think Peter Storey was key to that double-winning team actually lifting the double. He was called from the penalty spot as well. He scored some penalties under a lot of pressure. I think one was a FA Cup semi-final against Stoke City. And yeah, he was coolness personified, Peter Storey, and also tough as old boots. Basically, it was in an age when Leeds United were kicking their way to trophies. I say that, but also Leeds had an incredible amount of skill in their team, but they were tough nuts. Let's not make any bones about it, or break any bones, should I say, because they had players like Billy Bremner, very tough. Norman Hunter, bites your legs. He was playing for England as well. These players were gifted as well as tough. Even Johnny Giles, very gifted player, but he could put the foot in when he needed to, or when he felt he needed to. And remember, in those days, referees were much more lenient about fouls. So if you kick somebody, they would say to the player that's on the floor, get up. And the referees would actually say that. And they wouldn't be brandishing yellow cards. Maybe because they had to write it in a little book. Maybe that was the reason why they didn't like to brandish cards so much, because they weren't cards. The referee had a book, and that's why it's called a booking, I imagine. So basically, yeah, it was a different ball game in those days. But Storey, he was such a good player, honestly. A lot of that double winning side were, and so Peter Storey definitely getting my top 20, I think. Then number 18 is a lot of people's favourite choice, or one of their favourite choices, probably make most people's top 10. Not mine, personally, but Robert Pires comes in at 18. His flair, his creativity, his eye for goal made him a key player in Arsenal's attacking setup during the early 2000s, and he contributed to multiple trophies. Well, that's all true, but the reason why I'm not a massive, massive fan of Robert Pires, even though, yes, he's still hanging around the club, is because I didn't really get over the loss of Mark Overmars when he left. And Overmars, I can't forget how Overmars scored a winning goal at Old Trafford, which almost more or less resulted in Arsenal winning the league. Wasn't quite the decisive goal, but Overmars was an incredible player, so fast. So when Pires came in to play on the left wing instead of Overmars, I missed the raw pace of Overmars. Pires, technically very good. I did like Pyramid. I did like Pires. I did think he was a good player. He would get involved in a lot of squabbles off the ball. I used to notice he always used to do this thing with his teeth, make this sort of rabbit face. And yeah, I used to find that quite funny when he would do that and make these sort of rabbit faces at people on the sidelines. So he was up for a fight, Pires. And of course, I'm not saying he wasn't a gifted player. Of course he was. But he wasn't my favourite, because I was still mourning the loss of Mark Overmars. And that's probably the reason, if I really think about it, why did I not love Pires as much as everybody else seemed to? So yeah, I don't think that's controversial. He's in the top 20, though, even though I'm not sure he'd make my top 20, but he wouldn't be too far out, I suppose. He'd certainly scored a lot of goals, set up a lot of goals. So there's no denying that he deserves to be in that top 20. Okay, now we come to number 17, Alan Smith. His goal-scoring exploits and intelligent movement made him a fan favourite during his time at Arsenal, playing a crucial role in the team's title triumphs. So, yeah, Alan Smith, I don't think he was the most gifted player of all time, but certainly good in the air. And I was pleased that he was playing for Arsenal. Who wouldn't be? And as a journalist, he's also recapturing some of his old glory as well, because he's good in print as well as in front of goal. So, yeah, I can't really complain about Alan Smith being there. I don't, as I said, out of the list so far, I'd say he's probably, he'd probably hate me for saying this, but I'd say he's probably technically the least talented, even though I prefer him to Ozil. Of course I do. Peter Story, I thought, was slightly more technically gifted. But the trouble is, with Peter Story, you always think about all of his fouls rather than, well, some people do at least, rather than how good he was at passing the ball. But Alan Smith, he was a decent striker. He would score enough goals to deserve to be in that top 20. Again, I'm not sure he'd make mine, because he's not somebody that I sort of worshipped as such. I'm thinking Malcolm McDonald for me. I'm not sure if he's in the list, because I'm going through it with you from 20 up to 10. But Malcolm McDonald was a hero of mine. Alan Smith, not as much, even though I really appreciate everything he contributed to Arsenal's success. Then we come to number 16, and he's part of that 1971 double-winning team, George Armstrong. And it says, a tireless winger, Armstrong's industry and quality on the ball were integral to Arsenal's success in the 60s and 70s. Well, it wasn't that much success in the 60s, actually. Cup finals, yes, but no titles. And obviously, that was the time when Arsenal were really in the doldrums for most of the 60s, when it was coming to the tail end, I suppose. Things were coming together. Bertie Mee took the management reins, started turning this quite dull team. It's why we've got the song, 1-0 to the Arsenal, turning this dull team into something that could really contend for titles. But anyway, with Armstrong, he was dynamic. He non-stop energy. And I can't dispute he should be in the top 20. He was another hero of mine, actually. Incredibly good at crossing the ball as well. And that's a bit of an old skill, because I suppose this is going back to Pires for a moment. Arsene Wenger seemed to get these wingers in that didn't really cross the ball. Even Overmars didn't really cross it that much, that I remember. But Pires barely ever crossed it. It would always be sort of a low pass to the edge of the box. That's what I seem to remember from Pires. I mean, I'm not saying he couldn't cross, but I don't recall. Like, George Armstrong could cross a ball. No, absolutely no. And he would be flying as well. He'd be going at top speed, and he'd hit across that, somebody like Malcolm McDonald, or whoever was in the box, John Radford. See, these are the other names that could have been in there. Could have been Kennedy as well. Ray Kennedy, another top Arsenal player of that double-winning team. Those players would thrive on Armstrong's crosses. So Armstrong, yeah, totally deserves to be in that top 20. Okay, another controversial figure coming up for number 15, Ashley Cole, regarded as one of the best left-backs of his generation. Cole's defensive prowess and attacking contributions made him a key player before his controversial departure. Well, yeah, he got called Cashley because he moved to Chelsea. Personally, I didn't really have that much of an issue with him going to Chelsea. I still don't really see Chelsea as rivals of Arsenal. I only see Spurs as the local rivals, because technically that's what they are, even though, of course, Arsenal originated in South London. I've just got to say something about this. I saw some show, and I can't remember what it's called, like Good Morning Football or something like that. I can't remember. But there was this kind of, I don't know what you call it, like a trailer just before the show. And somebody was talking about Arsenal and saying that they originated in North London. Well, that's not true. They originated in South London. So the rivalry with Spurs, just in case you're wondering, the rivalry with Spurs only happened because Arsenal moved to north of the Thames to an area quite near Spurs. But they're not, if you go back like hundreds of years, they're not traditional rivals as such. I think Arsenal's closest rival probably would have been Charlton, because after all, it was Woolwich Arsenal, it was Royal Arsenal before it became the Arsenal or Arsenal. So, yeah, anyway, that's why I don't really see Chelsea as a rival. Yeah, they're in the same city, but I don't begrudge Chelsea any success they have. It doesn't mean I support Chelsea, because no, I don't. But I don't particularly dislike Chelsea. Just find it hard to do. I'd rather they're successful than, say, yeah, Spurs, to be honest. I'd find that quite hard to deal with. Luckily, they've not won the title, have they, for so long, since 61, I believe. So, you know, Chelsea have won it quite a few times. But they, to me, as one of the websites says, they've got no history. So part of that is the reason why I didn't get to. If he went to Spurs, perhaps I'd feel differently. But still, you've still got to try and take your emotions out of it and just judge a player by what he's done for your club. And actually, Cole, while he was at Arsenal, did a lot for the club. And I remember I was at the game at White Hart Lane when Arsenal won the league, and Ashley Cole, he ran into the centre circle. Most of the fans were gone at this point, and he planted this replica of the league, you know, the league trophy, planted it in the centre circle, and he was making a big song and dance in front of the remaining Spurs fans. It was getting a bit dicey, let's say. So yeah, I can't forget those antics from Ashley Cole, and I've always liked him. I just think he is one of the best left backs that I've probably ever seen. So how can he not be in the top 20? He has to be. Call him Cashley if you want, but ultimately, if you're a footballer, professional footballer, you need to take the best deal on the table. And Arsenal didn't offer him a good enough deal. So it's got to be the club's responsibility slightly for his departure. Can't just blame it on Ashley Cole. I'm sure he would have stayed at Arsenal if the package had been a little bit better. Okay, now we move on to Sol Campbell, number 14. His commanding presence and defensive solidity bolstered Arsenal's backline during his time at the club, contributing to numerous trophies. I love the fact that Sol Campbell got in there. I certainly would have put him in. I think he'd probably get in my top 10. I was so pleased when Arsenal signed him from Spurs. I could almost see it happening. And I work with a lot of Spurs fans, and I was saying, it looks like Campbell's going to be leaving, you know, because in that season when his contract was coming to an end, he kept on, when they are asking him about his future, I remember some interviewer came up to Sol Campbell and said, "So, Sol, are you staying or are you leaving?" He said, "I'm here, aren't I?" And that was his response. So he wouldn't respond to it. So I sensed that he was going to leave, obviously. And I don't know why, but I had this feeling he was going to go to Arsenal. There was nothing backing that. I hadn't heard anything from the rumour mill. It's just, I thought, I think Sol Campbell might go to Arsenal. And next thing you know, there he was. So yeah, I'm really happy he's in that top 20. I think he deserves to be a bit higher than 14. And also, the other thing I wanted to say, I was also pleased when he returned to the club for his second stint, but obviously that didn't work out quite as well as everybody wanted it to. So yeah, Sol Campbell certainly deserves to be, I think, in the top 20, and he would probably be in my top 10. So no controversy for me there. Number 13 is another fan's favourite, Freddie Ljungberg. His pace, skill and knack for crucial goals endeared him to the Arsenal fans, playing a significant role in the team's successes in the early 2000s. I'm not sure I'd put him in my top 10 or 20. I don't think he'd make it personally. I'm thinking Ray Parlour more. I don't know if Ray Parlour's coming up, but to me, Ray Parlour was a better servant for Arsenal. More industrious than Ljungberg. Ljungberg's quite industrious. I'm not going to say he didn't work hard. He did. But I preferred Ray Parlour. Not because he's British. He's just Ray Parlour was such a solid player. You knew what you're going to get with Ray Parlour. You're going to get tough tackling. You're going to get a certain amount of pace, quite a lot of skill. Ljungberg, maybe, I'd have to say Ljungberg probably was more skillful than Parlour. But Was he as dependable? I'd say no, not really. He would flit in and out of games, I thought, whereas Parler didn't really do that. He was just always, at worst, he was a solid seven. Lundberg could be an eight or nine, or could be a five. You know, that was just my opinion. I know it's not everybody else's. So Lundberg, but I remember when Lundberg appeared on the scene, I was quite impressed, I suppose. I say that, but, you know, with wingers are always the players that you most talk about, I suppose, because they do flit in and out of games. It's part of what wingers do. So basically, when I first saw Lundberg, that I remember, I think it was Manchester United at home, and he scored in that game. And yes, he scored a very good goal, but I don't remember him having like an amazing game. I just don't remember him like that. It's a bit like when I first saw Martinelli. When I first saw Martinelli in a friendly, he did absolutely nothing, but he did score. And then I saw him again in another friendly, and he did absolutely nothing, but I think he scored again. So Martinelli's another one of those sort of players, although I must say, the way Martinelli's going, even though his season's been a bit on and off, I think he may well be pushing Freddie Lundberg out of that top 20. But maybe not for AI, because AI sort of operates a couple of years in the past, doesn't it? It's not bang on up to date unless you're paying for something a bit higher grade than 3.5. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so now we get to number 12, and it's Pat Rice. Pat Rice's unwavering commitment and versatility made him a key figure for Arsenal over many years, both as player and as a coach. That's kind of cheating, putting him in as a coach as well. I'm not sure how good he was as a coach, to be honest. I used to watch him putting the cones out and see the warm-up that was going on under Arsene Wenger. I just thought, for Le Professeur, whatever he called himself, or whatever other people called him, Wenger, sometimes I thought he wasn't that scientific. I just didn't. Like, tactically, was he? I suppose he was with his stopwatch and the way, you know, diets, creatine. That's what Arsene Wenger brought to Arsenal. And yes, it was the appliance of science, and it did work for a while till people like Sir Alex Ferguson caught on and adopted the same sort of procedure before matches. So, yeah, I didn't think it was mind-blowingly brilliant, but maybe Arsenal, during on a match day, are not going to show off all their sort of special coaching tricks. So I thought, as a player, I preferred Pat Rice as a player to what he did as a coach. As a player, he was very strong. Obviously won a lot of caps for Northern Ireland. And I liked it when he was playing right back, and there was Sammy Nelson playing left back. There was the Northern Ireland fullbacks. And then of course Arsenal got Pat Jennings in goal, arguably one of the best keepers of all time. So he didn't play for Arsenal that long, Pat Jennings, so that's probably why he's not in there. And obviously, Pat Jennings is clearly more of a Spurs fan than anything, whereas Pat Rice is Arsenal through and through. No arguments there. Bob McNabb was a top player as well, though, who played on as a left back as opposed to a right back. And yeah, I don't know if I would leave him out of my top 20. Bob McNabb, top player, hard to imagine. So he seemed a bit more cultivated than Pat Rice, actually. Pat Rice, he gave it everything every game, so you can't fault his energy and his effort. He was always there every single game. So I've got no problem with Pat Rice being in the top 20, none at all, because, yeah, but I wouldn't put him in as a coach is what I'm trying to say, really. Okay, let's move on to 11 now. This one's even before my time, but we've all heard this name. Cliff Bastin, prolific goalscorer in the 1930s, his contribution to Arsenal's success during that era cannot be overstated. Well, he scored a record number of goals until Ian Wright beat it and then Thierry Henry beat it. So be interesting to see where those two figure in the top 10. But anyway, if indeed both of them do, I'll let you decide as we move up to the top 10, because that's where we're at now. I can't say really much about Cliff Bastin because obviously it didn't see him play. Ancient dinosaur, but I'm not ancient enough to know all about Cliff Bastin. Okay, now we move on to the top 10. So coming in at number 10, Charlie George. His iconic goal in the 1971 FA Cup final against Liverpool immortalised him in Arsenal folklore, showcasing his talent and flair on the big stage. Not only that, the great thing about Charlie George is, yes, he's still around the club, last I heard, doing hospitality. He is Arsenal through and through. He's from the area, local area, from Islington. And yeah, what else can I say about Charlie George? Amazing flair. So another player was one of my heroes of that double winning team. He didn't play as many games for Arsenal as a lot of us would have thought, given the time he was there. And I seem to remember him, didn't he get his hair permed and he went to Derby County, I think it was Derby. He was pretty good. Wherever he went, he was good, Charlie George. But I don't think he really wanted to leave Arsenal. It's just when things change, I'm not sure who got rid of him. I'm guessing it was Terry Neill got rid of Charlie George. And yeah, Charlie George seemed just as good at his new club. And yeah, when I say he was good, I mean, he was one of those players. Apparently he was sick before every match, which kind of shocked me when I heard that. He would throw up before every single match. So how he was as good as he was on the pitch, I will never know. But he was incredibly gifted as a footballer. I don't think we ever saw the best of him, because, you know, nowadays with the coaching they have and the nutrition they have nowadays, I think he would have ended up playing a lot more games for England than he actually did. I didn't check how many games he played, but I'm guessing just he's got a handful of caps. And given his ability, it's really not enough, because Charlie George was one incredible footballer in terms of his, as even ChatGPT knows, his talent and flair on the big stage. So he was a big game player, in other words. Okay, moving on to a player who's solid as a rock and even rhymes, Frank McClintock, number 9, defensive stalwart. His leadership and consistency were vital to Arsenal's success during the late 60s and early 70s. I'm still trying to think when this success was in the late 60s. Cup finals, I guess Chat thinks that's success. Kind of is, I suppose, but if you don't win them, it doesn't feel that successful, because the Fairs Cup was 1970, wasn't it? So, you know, and a couple of League Cup finals, but they were defeats. But Frank McClintock, he came in from Leicester, and I think Arsenal got rid of him too early. He was solid as a rock, as I said, for Arsenal. Great leader, arguably the best captain Arsenal have ever had. I've never met Frank McClintock. I wish I had. He seems like a very decent person. You can never really tell, can you, till you meet them? But yeah, Frank McClintock is one of those people. Very straight talking. And also a very good player, and played for Scotland quite a few times. Probably not as many as he deserved, but yeah. And then, if I remember correctly, Arsenal let him go to QPR, and he went on to almost win the league with QPR. I hope I've got my figures right there. And then the funny thing about Frank McClintock, I think when he went to QPR, there was a guy called Terry Mancini there who was nowhere near as good as Frank McClintock. And then Arsenal got Terry Mancini at some point. I don't think he did that well for Arsenal. He was a character, Terry Mancini. You couldn't help but like him. And he was okay, not a bad player at professional level, but Frank McClintock was absolutely solid. So, you know, hard to get past him. He didn't look that tall, Frank McClintock. I never checked his height, but he didn't look that tall for a centre-back. He wasn't like miniature like Martin Buchan, but he was just as good, I thought. I like Buchan too. I think Buchan was a better passer of the ball. I know Buchan's a Man U player, but I think Frank McClintock wasn't quite as good at passing, but he was, yeah, it wasn't going to be an easy game if you're playing against Frank McClintock. Let's put it like that. But not particularly outstanding in any particular area. Probably a bit like a smaller version of Tony Adams, let's say. I don't know. If you ask me which of the two players I'd prefer, unfortunately for most people, because they'd all say Tony Adams, I'd choose Frank McClintock. I'd rather have him in the dressing room. Because when I hear Tony Adams talking on TV and all the rest of it, and yeah, I love Shakespeare, but I don't particularly want to hear it in a dressing room. Whereas Frank McClintock, he's the way he talks to other people when asked questions, it just seems a lot more grounded. So I think as a captain, I'd take Frank McClintock over Tony Adams. Okay, now finally we get a goalkeeper in there. Bob Wilson comes in at number 8, the legendary keeper whose performances between the posts were instrumental in the triumphs between, it keeps on going about these triumphs in the late 60s and early 70s. Well, yeah, we're not going to, I suppose maybe like with the Fairs Cup, you could say that it started in the 60s, 69, but the trophy was won in the 70s or 1970. And then obviously we've got the double winning team of 71. And then there's an FA Cup at the end of the 70s. But Bob Wilson wasn't playing at the end of the 70s. And he was a very brave keeper. That's something that ChatGPT didn't pick up. And hence the reason, I'm not sure if this was the reason why he missed the 1972 FA Cup final against Leeds, but in goal was Jeff Barnett, who I think was a really, really good, he was such a good backup keeper, actually. Obviously nowhere near as good as Bob Wilson, but not many keepers were. I don't think Bob Wilson won that many caps for England, probably deserved more. He's very calm. And obviously we know Bob Wilson from Football Focus. I think a bit like Gary Lineker, who I'm not a big fan of, actually, but Bob Wilson, in a similar way, when he started broadcasting, he was a bit unclear the way he was speaking. And as time went on, he just got better and better at it. I suppose, you know, it's quite a natural progression. And Lineker was similar. I'm not sure Lineker's as good as Bob Wilson ever was as a pundit either, or not pundit, an anchor. But obviously he gets paid a lot more than Bob Wilson ever did. But Bob Wilson, yes, a great servant to football and to Arsenal. And, it's hard to dispute him being in the top 10. I'm wondering if David Seaman's going to be there, because I think he should be, because David Seaman also a brilliant goalkeeper for Arsenal, and John Lukic too. To me, these are all legendary keepers. It's so hard to judge between David Seaman and Bob Wilson. Who would I say was the better keeper? I'd probably go for David Seaman. I feel guilty for saying it, but I probably would, because some of his performances earned him that nickname of Safe Hands, which he totally deserved. So probably have to go for David Seaman. But if you're talking about bravery, you're going to go for Bob Wilson. And he basically, I think because of his bravery, he missed out on he got injured before the 1972 FA Cup final. And had he played, who knows? Maybe he would have saved Alan Clark's header. I doubt it, because it was well placed. So I'm not going to fault Jeff Barnett on that. And Arsenal, I remember they hit the crossbar in that game. I'm trying to think who it was hit the crossbar. But so they got quite close, and it was a very tense game with very few chances. Right, moving on to a Flair player who has to be in the top 10, I would say, Liam Brady. Brady's elegant style of play and exceptional technique made him one of Arsenal's finest midfielders, contributing significantly to the team's success in the 70s and 80s. So, yeah, well, wasn't only FA Cups, really, wasn't it? Was there a Cup Winners' Cup win also? Maybe not. No, and there's Cup Winners' Cup final. But as I said before, ChatGPT thinks a final is success. But Liam Brady was one of the best players I've ever seen, without a doubt. He was worth the admission money on his own. He was so good. I'm going to have to mention a name that's a bit controversial because of stuff that's happened off the pitch. But on the other wing was Graham Ricks, who was also a fine technician. But Liam Brady was the best of the two. Yeah, I can't dispute him being in there. He just seemed to have everything, really. And he scored that amazing goal that keeps getting replayed against Spurs, when I think it was a 5-1 demolition. I could have got the score wrong. At White Hart Lane, absolutely tore them apart. No wonder he got moved to, I think it was Juventus. I think Juventus snapped him up. And yeah, that was a tragic day when he left Arsenal. I was pretty upset about that. I can't deny it. His brothers were also footballers. They played for Millwall. My dad played with them. And very nice guys. I've met them. And actually, just going back to Bob Wilson for a moment, I think my dad's final game before he had to finish his playing days because of injury was actually at Arsenal in a reserve team semi-final. He scored against Bob Wilson. Arsenal put out a pretty good team. But my dad got really badly injured by somebody called Burton Shaw, who clattered him. I'm not quite sure why Burton Shaw was playing, but anyway, he somehow was in that team, apparently. And he he did my dad's cartilage, and that was the end of my dad's playing career. But he was just making a comeback, I think, at that point from another injury. So yeah, finished at 27. So not too bad in those days. Anyway, moving on to one of my favourites, if not my favourite, Ian Wright, number 6. Prolific goal scorer. Obviously, he beat Cliff Bastin's record. His lethal finishing and infectious passion endeared him to the fans during his time at the club. There was one incident, though, where he was shouting out the window at the fans walking past. And I don't know if that endeared him too much. But how can you not love Ian Wright? He's Arsenal personified for me. I'd put him higher than top 6. It's just everything about him. And also he's from my sort of neck of the woods as well. That's probably why I like him even more. But yeah, Ian Wright's an absolute legend. If I had to choose one Arsenal player that I could meet, it would be him. One ex-Arsenal player. It would be him for sure. And some of his goals are just incredible. I was a bit upset when I think Arsene Wenger left him out of an FA Cup winning team, left him on the bench. Don't think he didn't even get any minutes at all, and he ended up at West Ham, which, yeah, I was disappointed about that. I didn't blame Ian Wright. I just thought Wenger shouldn't, yeah, perhaps Wenger just thought his time was up. It's time for him to go. I'm not sure I agree with that. I don't know how many goals he got for West Ham. Nowhere near as many as he did for Arsenal. But then is that unexpected, given that, you know, when you think about it, playing for a team like West Ham, they don't create as many chances as Arsenal. So if you're playing for a team like Arsenal, Liverpool, Man U, Manchester City nowadays, you're going to get lots of chances. So if you're prolific and a predator like Ian Wright, you're going to get loads of goals. You're playing a team like West Ham, who are often up and down, you know, middle of the table most of the time, it's going to be much harder to score. So I'm trying to explain these statistics without even looking at them. Right, now we move to the top 5. David Seaman, one of England's greatest goalkeepers, so luckily he is in there. He was a crucial figure in Arsenal's defence, spelt with an S because it's ChatGPT, in the 1990s. Known for his shot-stopping ability, commanding presence, and I would say safe hands. So yeah, I'm not going to talk about him anymore. Ah, now we get to the very, very interesting top 4. So Patrick Vieira makes 4th position. A dominant presence in midfield, he epitomised power, skill and leadership. I agree with that. Certainly a top, top leader. And he played a pivotal role in Arsenal's triumphs in the late 90s and early 2000s. So, yeah, hard to argue with that. But one thing, this just reminds me of another player I would put in, who's not in this top 20, I'm guessing, because I don't think he's going to get above Vieira. Although I have to say, I know this is controversial, I'd probably put him above Vieira. Emmanuel Petit. I think this guy was so underrated. If it wasn't for him, I don't think Vieira could have gone on the marauding runs that he went on, because Petit sort of held the line together. A bit like Peter Story. He was a linchpin, Emmanuel Petit. But he often gets forgotten because he went to Chelsea. And talking of that, I'm not sure I mentioned him, but Cesc Fabregas, how is he not in the top 20? He's one of the best players I've ever seen. He has to be in the top 20. Probably one of the best passers of the ball that Arsenal have ever had. So it's a crime that he's not in the top 20, even if he did go to Barcelona and then Chelsea. And by the way, Arsenal did have the chance to bring him back, but chose not to. There's a lot of stories behind that, obviously. We heard stories that Fabregas sulked before he got his move to Barcelona. Maybe that's true. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. But that's the rumour. And because of that, Arsenal's manager at the time, Arsene Wenger, decided not to bring him back, which, you know, the manager, you've got to back the manager, haven't you? But ultimately, I still feel, looking back on it now, I wish Arsenal and Arsene Wenger could have eaten a humble pie and brought Fabregas back when he wanted to come back, because he still had a few good years left in him, as we saw at Chelsea, because I think he won quite a few trophies there. So there you are. But I would certainly, yeah. Vieira, would I put Fabregas above Vieira? Possibly. Vieira was an incredible player, but so was Fabregas. Physically, Vieira would have the edge on Fabregas, for sure. But was he a better passer? I'd say not. did he run with the ball better? But then what about Fabregas when he scored against Spurs and it was an amazing run. He went past all those players and he slammed the ball into the bottom corner. I mean, those moments will never be forgotten by me, at least. So yes, I would personally put Fabregas above Vieira, possibly Petit as well. Those three top midfielders. Those three, I would say, were the best midfielders I've ever seen. Even though I love Peter Story, I don't think I'd put him quite at that level. So let's move on to the top three then. So coming in at number three, Dennis Bergkamp. I often forget about how good Dennis Bergkamp was. So sometimes I miss him out on my when I'm trying to put together a top 11 of all time. I sometimes miss him out. And if I've got to go from and sort of mix up the positions, he doesn't always get in, because I just sort of see him as a luxury player. Anyway, what does Chat say about him? Chat GPT says he was revered for his exquisite skill and vision and was a creative force behind many of Arsenal's successes during his tenure at the club. Yes, he was, but he started off quite ropey, actually. I think when he first arrived from Inter Milan, if I'm not mistaken, he really struggled to make an impact at the beginning. Obviously, he didn't like flying, so he missed a lot of the European games. I don't think, this is probably one of the reasons I don't put him in my top 10. He was an amazing footballer, incredibly skillful. I was very pleased that Arsenal had him. Vision like you wouldn't believe. Yeah, I mentioned Odegaard earlier, but was he better than Bergkamp? Probably not, in reality. Does he work harder than Bergkamp? Yes, I think he does. Bergkamp wasn't lazy, and he did start sticking his foot in as time went on, but in the beginning, he was getting roughed up a little bit, so that's why Dennis Bergkamp struggled initially. But a lot of people forget about that. He didn't make an instant impact, so let's not get it twisted, as they say. Right, moving on. Number two, Tony Adams. He certainly wouldn't be in my top 10, as I've said before, even though, yes, I appreciate everything he did. He's got a statue outside, so clearly lots of people disagree with me on this. Anyway, a true Arsenal stalwart. Adams captained the team through some of its most successful years, known for his leadership, defensive solidity and commitment. And, of course, he was part of that defence that Arsene Wenger inherited. Dixon, Winterburn, Adams, and then Steve Bould or Keown, take your pick of those two. I think they're all pretty strong defenders. But in terms of talent, in terms of technical ability, how could I put Adams in the top 10? I can't. I mean, how good a leader was he in the dressing room? I've heard he was really good, but when you hear him on TV, he doesn't sound such a great leader. And obviously, as a manager, he's not been as successful as perhaps people thought he would be. But I think, we don't know. We don't know what he was like at that time. I personally don't. And I didn't think he had a lot of pace, but he had a lot of guts. I'll give him that. He had a lot of guts. But would I take him over Frank McClintock? No. Would I take him over another player that's not been put in this top 20? Peter Simpson, who was quite a cultured centre-back? No. Would I put him above Sol Campbell? No way. Even though Sol Campbell's obviously got those Spurs links from the past, but not that he's his persona non grata there now, I think, forever. But Tony Adams, I think he is a sort of one of those guys you cut him through your middle and he bleeds Arsenal, that old chestnut or that old hackneyed phrase. He is one of those sort of people. But ultimately, does he deserve to be in the top 10? Not for me, he doesn't. Sorry to upset the Arsenal fans there, but there you go. That's just my opinion. I just don't think technically he was up there. But leadership, everyone says yes, and I'm remain a little bit unconvinced. But he did say, I think it was him who said that when Arsene Wenger first arrived at Arsenal, he was obviously part of that amazing back four. I can't argue that was probably as a unit. The best back four that Arsenal have ever had was Dixon, Winterburn, Adams, Bould or Keown. Amazingly strong back four. Really tough. So Adams was no pushover. Let's remember that. He was a tough guy in a tough era. And yeah, he's been a bit strange since he went into management, I think. But as a footballer, yeah, you wouldn't look forward to playing against Tony Adams particularly, I don't think, and certainly not against Martin Keown. And I could argue Martin Keown should be in the top 20, I think, because if I think about it, if I were playing against an Arsenal team, which never happened, unfortunately, to me, but say if I did, the players, the defenders I'd least want to play against would probably be Martin Keown, would probably be number one out of the Arsenal defenders, and Adams would be up there as well, because you would know you're going to get kicked a lot, and clearly that's not what strikers want, or any forward player. So no real surprises. The number one is Thierry Henry, widely regarded as Arsenal's greatest player. His combination of pace, skill, goals, and goal-scoring prowess elevated him to legendary status. He holds the club record for goals scored, and that's why my son is named after him. Actually, I gave him the name before Thierry Henry signed, just before. It was a dot on the cards at the time, actually. He was just about to sign and everybody knew it. And Thierry Henry is a player I've always admired. A bit like Dennis Bergkamp, he did take a little while to settle. He didn't set the world alight when he first arrived at Arsenal. How can you not love Henry? He would certainly be... I'm always debating, who do I love more, Ian Wright or Thierry Henry? It's a very hard decision to make. I'd probably choose Ian Wright, but in terms of technical ability and pace, you have to go for Henry. He was incredibly fast. Talking of fast players, Theo Walcott is not everyone's favourite. I love Theo Walcott as well. Incredibly quick. Some people said nearly as quick or as quick or even quicker than Thierry Henry. There was not much in it, but obviously Henry was a better all-round player. Walcott, I feel, sorry to suddenly mention him because I'm not saying he'd get in my top 10, but I think if it had been played right by Wenger, if it had been played in as a striker, as a Thierry Henry type striker, he would have done much better, but Wenger never gave him much chance. So I felt very sorry for Theo Walcott, because I think he would have scored more than 100 goals, had a lot more than 100 goals, had he been utilised properly. But yeah, Thierry Henry deserves that number one spot, and there's no mistaking that. Right, so that was my first sort of AI version of this Arsenal podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, so when will my next one be, you might ask? I don't even know the answer to that, but it'll be whenever it is. Okay, so there you are. Unclear as ever. All right, until the next time. Adios, amigos.